Today's episode covers an incredibly important but difficult topic, which is domestic and family violence. For this chat, we were so fortunate to be joined by social workers Beck and Mia, who spend their days providing support and helping people who are experiencing domestic and family violence. In this episode, we cover what domestic and family violence is, how to spot the signs and the supports that are available, as well as how to help someone who may be experiencing it. We understand this may be a difficult topic for some listeners, so if you prefer to skip today's episode and join us in the next one, please do that. But if you do take the time to listen to this episode, we'd appreciate if you could share it with your network to help us spread the word. And finally, if you find yourself experiencing domestic and family violence, remember you are not alone and support is available. You can call Safe Steps on 1800 015 188 or 1800 RESPECT, as well as 000 if you are in immediate danger. Hello and welcome back to The Brunch Files, where we serve up bottomless, brunch-worthy topics about life in your 30s. We're your hosts, Tegan and Rachel, and today we have two very special guests on the show to talk about a really tough topic. It's actually the first time we've had two guests, so we are doing a bit of an experimental audio setup. So if you notice a little bit of variation with the mics, that is why. But Beck and Mia are social workers who support women and children experiencing family violence in our communities, angels walking on earth, I would say. And we're really fortunate to have them on the show today to talk about their work and lead what can be a really difficult conversation about a difficult topic. Given the events that happened earlier in 2024, there's been a bit of a spotlight on this issue. And so, we're just really keen to chat about it with you both today and get a little bit of insight, but also share, I guess, some support services and things and where people can go. So
that's it. So welcome, Beck and Mia.
Thanks for having us.
Sorry, happy to have you here. We thought we might just ask you to introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about yourself, why you got into this field, and anything else you want to share. Let's start with you, Beck.
Oh, thanks. Hello. Thank you so much for having me. So I have been in this field for about 6 years now. So I started in homelessness, which is where I always wanted to go into ever since I was in high school. That was something that I wanted to do.
Is there something that made you want to go into that?
I think as a kid, I spent a lot of time in the city. Mm. So I saw a lot of homelessness in the city and it always stuck with me. So it was just something that I felt like I wanted to help them. I was just lucky that the organization that I worked for also had sort of a way into working with family violence as well. So that's how I ended up in there.
Amazing. I suppose often those two issues can be interrelated.
Absolutely.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you, Mia?
Hi. I'm Mia. I definitely think my personal experience has led me to working with family violence. I started off in youth work and then transitioned into working with women and children experiencing family violence. Similar to Beck, I've been in the role for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I love continuing to empower women to make better decisions around their relationships and, yeah.
Incredible. Honestly, we have so much respect for what you do. Mm. Are you happy to share a little bit about your own personal experience? I think obviously reaching out for help can be an incredibly difficult thing to do, and I just imagine that anyone that's reached out and dealt with one of you, just how powerful that must be when you have your own lived experience to bring to it. You actually can show empathy and understanding. Are you happy to touch on that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think for me, my lived experience, I was relatively young, I guess. I mean, I think 20 years old is pretty young. I think that now.
Yeah, no, the older we get, the younger that seems.
Absolutely, yeah. So, so it was a past relationship. I guess it started off with sort of like that love bombing, I guess, really feeling like I was everything to this person. And I was really special, and I guess I went along with everything, as you sort of do when you're sort of swept off your feet like that. Just progressively got worse. So, to the point where I was being, I guess, not told what I couldn't eat, but it was about if we were out for dinner or something, it was, I think you're finished. Mm. I think you've had enough now. Wow. So it's things like that where it can be that subtle. Mm. And it can happen quite subtly. You don't always notice it for what it is. It did progressively get worse. It did end up in a physical assault as well.
I'm so sorry. Thank you.
That's, yeah, it's, I'm in the most beautiful relationship I could ever have imagined now.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's, it's absolutely in the past. But I guess for me, I actually had no idea that there was even a service that would support me. I didn't even realize that it was domestic violence at that time. It wasn't until years later that I saw a counselor and it actually came up and she said, do you realize you've experienced domestic violence? And I was like, whoa. And I think for me, when I'm working with clients, I think about that moment because generally it's us that are telling them that that is actually domestic or family violence. And I think it's really hard to hear it because if you don't know that that's what's happening, it's really confronting.
Yeah. I think you highlighted something there in that story as well that's so probably such a common experience for people who do find themselves in these situations, because I think – you know, having not experienced that myself, you kind of think there and you go, how could I ever find myself in that situation? But I think like what you said, it's those subtle things, it kind of just, it's insidious and it's not all of a sudden you go out once and it ends up in physical violence. It's all these small things. And before you know it, it's like, well, how did we get here? So I think, yeah, because it can seem if you haven't experienced it, you kind of go, how does it get to that point? But yeah, all those little things, I guess.
Just adds up. Yeah. Did you have a story you wanted to share, Mia?
Yeah. Well, my experience isn't, you know, from an intimate relationship. It's from a family member. Mm. So when I was quite young, I guess, you know, growing up in an Asian culture, Asian family, it's quite normalized overseas that I guess, you know, providing discipline to your children is, I guess, in ways of physical violence. So yeah, it's definitely something that I continue to heal from. But yeah, I guess like from being such a young person, 12 years old, speaking up about family violence, yeah, it just makes me realize now that like I want to empower young people to speak up about it and that it's okay, like regardless of I guess what you think the consequences might be, there is light, you know, at the end of the tunnel. So yeah, I guess my experience is a little bit different to Bex, and definitely everyone's experience is, you know, completely different. But yeah.
Thank you for sharing, both of you. Honestly, I think it takes a lot of bravery to be able to talk about that. And yeah, what you're doing now is just incredible. Yeah. We thought, we sort of need to define the problem because I think not everyone actually has maybe an understanding of what family and domestic violence can be. And we actually asked our listeners a couple of questions just to get a bit of an idea of what their take or their level of understanding on this was.
Yeah.
One of our questions was, do you know what signs to look out for in your own relationship or in someone else's? 68% said yes, which is really encouraging, but 32% said not really.
Yeah. Because I think, again, that I think that speaks to that point of that those signs can be so minimal, and it's also because I think we all know of someone who's, you know, that you might hear about it, slightly problematic dynamic, but it's like, where does it tip?
Where's the line?
Yes. And I think it's impossible to define in a lot of cases. People know clearly what sits either side, but what sits in that sort of gray area I think can be really difficult for people to sort of comprehend. And do you encounter people thinking, oh, I feel like I'm overreacting?
Yeah. And it's the minimizing as well, which goes hand in hand, I think. And that's just because I think for a lot of people it is that it's the subtle increase. And it just makes it sometimes seem not as bad as what it may actually be or what it looks like from the outside.
And I think because you love the person, I imagine that you want to see the best, or you probably minimize it to yourself. Like you'd be lying to yourself to be like, well, how, this isn't me. I'm not in it, you know. And he loves me and I love him, you know, or her, whatever it might be. Like,
We also asked, do you feel you have an understanding of what family and domestic violence is? And 100% of people did say yes. So
That's amazing.
That's great. Really awesome.
And then we also asked, do you feel you'd know where to get help when it comes to getting support for yourself or a loved one experiencing family or domestic violence? 69% said yes, and 31% again said wouldn't really know where to start. So I think that's a little bit telling. But I guess what would, is there an accepted definition for family and domestic violence in Victoria or Australia?
I think there is. I feel like we actually have it here. Yeah. So what we can use, I guess, to sort of define it. It is tricky. I don't think anyone can perfectly define it. But yeah, so what we found was, so family and domestic violence is any violent, threatening, coercive or controlling behaviour that occurs in current or past family, domestic or intimate relationships. So I think, yeah, important to remember that it is anyone. It could be your ex step parent. It could be your cousin. It could be a distant relative, an ex partner, an ex partner's new partner. It is so broad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I think something that I read this book called, it's called "Look What You Made Me Do" or "See What You Made Me Do" by Jess Hill. I'm pretty sure it's Jess Hill.
Yes, yeah,
incredible book, and I would recommend.
She's amazing.
Yes, I recommend people read it. And to me, I think, and I, this is going to sound awful, but I always kind of had in my head like the whole, why do people stay? Why do people put up with it? I'm like, there's no way I'd stay, you know, that kind of thing. And listening to that book and learning about, again, that insidious kind of creep and that coercive control and that is part of family violence. It's not necessarily, you know, being hit or, you know, there's so much more to it. And just how people can get trapped, how people can find them. It was just really enlightening for me. So I really recommend people do read that book.
Yeah. Because it's such a multifaceted issue. I think sometimes people can think about it in that very, I guess.
Black and white. Or
simplified sense that it's, it's physical violence, but there's, you know, financial abuse, there's that coercive control. There's a whole bunch of things that can kind of make up with it, even if someone never actually commits a violent act, I would assume.
And that's it, like,
for sure.
No, even in the media, like the, you know, I guess the advertising around family and domestic violence, like you'll see like a man, like, you know, going to hit a woman when actually like majority of it is like internal, like emotional abuse, coercive, controlling behaviours. So.
And that whole like separating or isolating the victim, like gradually cut everyone else and any kind of support network out of their life, so then they're sort of almost like dependent.
For sure, it's a big one.
Now we know the picture is not great in Australia, so do we have kind of some a few stats and facts around domestic violence and the state of play in Australia?
I mean, I guess in terms of domestic violence, like, we do want to acknowledge that people and men experience family violence. However, you know, I guess in terms of statistics here in Australia, it is gendered. So, you know, one in four women experience violence by an intimate partner or a family member compared to one in 13 for men. So, like, I guess in terms of, you know, the harm to women, one woman is killed nearly every week because of family violence. And I guess the concerning thing for me as well is that it takes an average of 7 times for a woman to leave a violent relationship. I guess the impacts on services as well, such as police. I don't know, Beck, if you want to touch base on that.
Yeah, I feel like, I think a pretty strong stat that we found for that was that police actually attend a family violence incident every 6 minutes.
6 minutes.
It's wild.
Every 6 minutes.
That is just, I just felt like goosebumps in a bad way. Like, it's just.
So that stat actually shocked me quite a lot as well. We're working in it and we see it and we see how much it's occurring. But I think to think about what police are also attending as well, and that impact on them and the impact that it does have on services when it is so common.
And the same people, like, if you're talking about average being 7 times, that's going to be many that are many more, that many more times than that. And, you know, you would be, police would be, other emergency services would be dealing with the same people, the same situations again and again and again, not to mention new ones, other ones.
I think the other stat that I find really shocking is even just that 1 in 4. Because if you think about your friendship group, like 1 in 4, how many of your friends may be experiencing this and you don't know?
I wonder this because I'm like, I have to know people. There have to be people in my life. And I'm like, am I oblivious? Am I missing signs? Should I be doing something? Like, there's so many. Yeah. So I guess on that, signs and red flags, like what are some things that we should be vigilant about in our own relationships, in, you know, when we're dealing with friends and loved ones or other acquaintances, maybe in your profession you have colleagues, like what are some things we can look out for?
And I guess also to really highlight that family violence, I think sometimes as well, if you're a little bit removed from what you haven't had experience, you can kind of have a picture of the type of person that it affects. But I think, just I guess highlighting that, you know, it really doesn't discriminate regardless of who you are, your age, your background, your job, your social status. So you could be the most privileged person in the world and still be experiencing this.
Yeah, it's definitely so important. It's so important because I think, I mean, I don't know about you, Mia, but I feel for me when I first started working in family violence, everyone was like, so who's the most common? Like who's it most commonly happening to? And I'm like, women. Yeah. Women and children. Any women and children. It's people think that it's this certain, I don't know.
Demographic.
Certain demographic that it's happening to. And it's not. It's everyone. So it's a really, really good point that you touched on because it is really important to realize that it is actually everyone. And I think that's sort of what makes people look at everyone as a whole rather than sort of thinking, oh, no, it couldn't possibly be happening to that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess what are some of the ways you see this play out, some of the signs, some of the behaviors that I suppose are red flags?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we kind of touched on a little bit earlier around, you know, controlling behaviors and, you know, you've experienced someone saying like, you know, that's enough in terms of like what you ate. So I guess, you know, on the back of that, it's like what you wear, you know, isolating you, which we kind of touched on earlier as well, like going through your phone. Like I feel like especially in like new relationships when there's insecurities around someone, you know, not being faithful to the relationship or something, you know, they'll be asked to go through their phone, which I think a lot of people normalize, which is, it's not okay. And, you know, if you've got those insecurities within yourself to want to go through your partner's phone, like you need to check yourself. And
to show the lack of trust too, doesn't it? Like if you've got something to worry about.
Exactly. And you know, where is that coming from? Exploring that, I guess. You mentioned earlier around controlling finances. I think, you know, these are some things that we don't see, you know, like a bruise or
For sure. I think, the finances is a big one because it can be what impacts someone from wanting to leave or feeling like they can leave because they don't have access to finances to leave or they feel like everything's been done for them for such a long time that they wouldn't know how to do it for themselves.
Do you find that this is like, it poses a bit of a tangent to that, but do you find just being in part of this like cost of living crisis over the last couple of years has compounded that for people?
Definitely. I think so. It makes it really hard.
Especially I imagine if kids are involved as well.
Definitely. And it can be hard too, with like going off the back of that with kids. It can be hard for people when they do have kids with someone and they think, you know, they say, oh, he's a great dad. So yeah, that can be really hard as well. It's because, you know, their eyes, he might be a great dad. So they're sort of like, well, I don't want to take the kids away from him.
And that guilt then. Mm-hmm. And it's not so cut and dry, is it? Like that must be so grey when you're thinking about I'm ripping apart my family, what is actually good for us, what's good for them, what's
And also so hard if you're trying to leave. Because you can't, if you've got children with this person, you can't just, it's not always easy to just say you can't see your children. Like I don't imagine you can really do that unless the courts are in, family court and things are involved. So then how do you then not see that person if you have kids? Like that just would make it so difficult.
Definitely.
You mentioned love bombing earlier. What is love bombing?
So it's hard because it can be a whole range of things, but it is an emotional manipulation technique. So it involves like excessive compliments or attention, affection, and then it's eventual control. I think it can be really tricky because sometimes when someone gets into a new relationship, you're not going to notice that it actually is love bombing. You just think, we're so in love.
This is a great relationship.
Yeah. This is that, like, in the honeymoon.
Yeah.
As they say, anyway, in a healthy relationship, I suppose.
Yeah.
You can kind of go through a bit of a phase where everyone's, you know, the gifts and the, you know, all those sorts of things.
Yeah. It's sort of just, I guess it's more of like, it's a bit of an attention grab, I think, from the perpetrator, from the person who's doing that. It's them trying to make sure that all the attention's on them.
So like the gratitude and the, okay. Does that sort of happen in a bit of a cycle then? So after then things go downhill and then there's a kind of moment of or perhaps forgiveness and then the love bombing starts. Like is that part of what can happen?
Yeah, it can. Yeah, definitely in that whole cycle. Yeah, So, and that's generally what we see in the cycle, is that there'll be some form of abuse or control or, you know, what happens in that relationship, and then they'll sort of come back around.
Yeah, okay.
And, and sort of there's that manipulation of them doing all the right things just to keep them there. And then it comes back around again.
What other behaviours do you look out for?
I mean, I guess if someone's, you know, if someone you're dating or in a relationship with treats you with disrespect, you know, shaming you, putting you down, calling you names, you know, even especially for women, like even, you know, our looks, like it's, if someone says, you're too fat or you're eating too much.
Yeah, or like you said, you think you've had enough. Even that is soul crushing, you know, like opens up a whole lot of like, you know, we're millennial women. We've got some issues with our bodies. Like, but anyone, like that's just, it's awful. And that's like the person you love or the person that's supposed to love you making you feel that way. Like there is something wrong with that. Like,
A family member or an intimate partner. Like it's,
No matter who it is.
For but sure. Like we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't take that from a friend.
No.
Or someone from the public, you know. Like, so why would we take it from a family member or an intimate partner?
I suppose there's that level of emotional investment that feels
very true.
That you, the probably the stakes probably feel higher to push back.
Because
you've got more to lose potentially.
True. And it's that fear of retaliation too, I guess. You don't know what's going to happen if you do push back.
And I guess is it any kind of making you feel unsafe, I suppose, in any area? And that maybe that's physically unsafe, psychologically unsafe. What about blame?
I guess people that blame you for you know, their bad behavior. So, you know, majority of the time, like we hear women, you know, say that, oh, you know, he said, look what you made me do. You know, you made me do this. You know,
that it's their fault.
Pretty much.
Definitely.
And just, I guess, you know, making you feel like you feel uncomfortable, you know, in that scenario, you know, whether it's pressuring you to do something. And, you know, we touched base on kids earlier, like, you know, what are those kids being exposed to? And, you know, they might not hear it or see it, but they're present in that household. So,
And the effects of it, they're seeing the effects of it.
Yeah. And I guess that blame as well would just totally shake your, or just over time would just totally degrade your self-confidence, your own self-esteem, your own sense of where you feel like your, I guess, what am I trying to say? Like your perception of reality as well.
Yeah, I guess gaslighting, because then you can imagine, like, go, am I, it's your fault, or
am I going crazy? Like, am I, like, this is not, you know, it would be, I can imagine it would be hugely confusing as well.
That sense of belief within yourself, right? If someone's putting you down, if someone's calling you, you know, fat, or, you know, you're this, you're that, and you start to believe that in yourself, which, you know, isn't okay.
No.
And anything else you sort of wanted to cover?
I guess, well, another one that's probably some people don't think about as well is, I guess sort of what Mia touched on about if making, trying to make you do anything that you don't want to do. But even having sex, mm-hmm. if they're pressuring you into doing that, that can mm-hmm. be, you know, a huge red flag as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and there are services for that. Mm-hmm. So there is Sakaza. So they do specialise mm-hmm. in support for that too.
Mm-hmm. And we will be listing all the supports. We'll touch on it at the end, but we'll definitely list in the show notes and on our social media yeah. supports as well.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's a really important point as well, because I think people probably don't think that sexual assault can happen in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like if you're romantically yep. involved with someone and you're sometimes having sex for pleasure because mm-hmm. you want to, mm-hmm. that therefore if there's a situation where you're perhaps pressured into that, that constitutes assault.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not entitled to anything any more yeah. than a stranger is, you know. Like
I guess right. consent still stands, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
And then I suppose there's the physical physical and verbal abuse as well. The things we probably more think about when mm-hmm. someone says family or domestic violence, mm-hmm. yep. any kind of hitting, pushing, punching, strangulation, throwing items, any kind of sort of violent yelling and screaming. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like derogatory comments. Like you said, mm-hmm. words can mm-hmm. be such a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, I think when we talk about weapon, mm-hmm. like we think of like a gun mm-hmm. or like mm-hmm. a knife, mm-hmm. but that's actually like anything that mm-hmm. is intent to hurt someone. Mm-hmm. So if yeah. someone's like throwing their phone at like full yeah. force towards you, mm-hmm. like as an intention to mm-hmm. hurt you, or like yeah. just, you know, a vase, a anything fruit, that, yeah.
any, like yeah. could be anything yeah. could be, yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And I guess in terms of, you know, physical and sexual violence, I really want to encourage, if anyone is going through that, seek medical advice, you know, go see your GP, speak to someone, you know, within the community, family or friends even. Yeah, because it's a lot.
And I suppose the other thing I would just say is you are not alone. Mm-hmm. Like we just talked about the sheer volume in terms of one in four. Mm-hmm. You know, your situation, you are not alone. There are yeah. many others that are going through this, that have gone through this. And like both of you can attest, your help is available and yeah. beautiful relationships and people are out there that, mm-hmm. you know, miles apart from where you're at now.
Mm.
And I guess that seeking help, as incredibly hard as it is such an important step.
How does yeah. it work? So if you were to say you did have some sort of violent altercation with an intimate partner and you disclose mm-hmm. that to a GP,
mm-hmm.
I guess these new laws around mandatory reporting, particularly mm-hmm. if there's kids involved, may hold people back because they worry that then it's going to go forward. So how does that work with consent? Like if you're a victim survivor in that situation, how are you then, I guess, involved in the next steps? Because I guess that could be a source of fear for people potentially.
Yeah, I mean, that's tricky. I think it is only with the kids.
Okay.
I don't think that a GP could really do anything against their will. Yeah. It is really all around consent, because the thing is, for yeah. a victim survivor, a lot of their decision making has been taken away from them
mm-hmm. yeah,
for exactly. a long time.
Mm.
So it's really trying to empower them that they have that opportunity to make that decision.
Okay.
They want to access supports and they can.
Yeah.
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 So what can we do if we think a friend or a loved one or a family member or someone in our life is stuck in a bad situation?
The first point I think that Mia and I were really big on is just be patient, mm-hmm. be really, really patient with them, and let them come to you when they're ready. So let them know that you're there, be that support for them. But at the end of the day, it is their life and it has to be their decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess, you know, just encouraging them to seek support, you know, I think, especially for me anyway, like, you know, if I see a family member or a friend going through an abusive relationship, like I've got to really remind myself that I'm not the expert in their life. Like this is, you know, their experience. They're going through this. You know, I know like probably like 10% of what's going on in their relationship. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess in terms of that, they are really the expert of the what they're going through, and they know their abuser, so they know how to, you know, I guess either keep themselves safe, or, you know, when to talk, when not to talk, when to seek support, when to leave. So I think that's really an important one to remind ourselves as well, because it's easy to go into like problem solving, especially as a social worker or a friend, giving advice. Yeah.
Definitely.
Can those support services as well, like 1-800-RESPECT and things, give advice for people who may suspect something is happening to a friend or another family member as well? So you can access those supports as well for advice?
Yep, definitely. Yeah. If you do feel like you want a bit more tailored advice, you can definitely
discuss the specifics.
Something else you've sort of jotted down in your notes to us to help us understand this was around being aware that they may not be, I suppose once they share that, it can become a reality for them. And maybe they haven't kind of realized they're experiencing abuse. So I guess, how do you navigate those difficult conversations? And I'm someone that, like, I get really angry on behalf of someone and would probably go into problem solving mode, be like, what the fuck? You know,
leave.
Yes. So like, what are you doing?
Objective when it's not you, because you've got that outside perspective. But when you're in it, it can be so difficult to discern.
Yes.
You know, which way is up and what's the right thing to do.
And like you said, Mia, we can't see what's happening behind closed doors. We don't actually know and what's going on internally for them. What are some do's and don'ts, I suppose, in terms of having those? How to be supportive? Listening was clearly a big one.
But. Yeah, I think it is the biggest one. I think not pushing what you want them to do. Because even as workers, it's the same. At the end of the day, we can give advice, but we don't tell them what to do.
Yeah.
So it has to be the same as a friend or a family member. Yeah. You can give them advice. You can seek out some services for them, provide them with some numbers or details, or, you know, maybe say you'll be a support person for them at that appointment if they want to go to an appointment, or make a report to police, maybe be their support person.
Yeah, or even if they're needing to leave and seeking somewhere as a refuge, you know, offering that support, you know, just a simple, you know, you can stay here if you need to.
Like practical help.
Offering some safety planning, whether that's calling 000 and, sending a text message with a code to that friend. So they know that when they are in trouble, that friend can contact.
Yeah. Like having a kind of safe word or emoji that they send if they're in trouble.
Yeah. It can be really helpful.
And I guess it's important that if you are going to raise that with a person you suspect is in that situation, that you're then prepared be that support. Because I think sometimes they always used to talk about this with Are You Okay Day, like the 4 steps to ask someone, Are You Okay? And the last one was always like, or there was always advice around it, like make sure you do it in a time where you have the time and capacity to be that support. Because once someone opens up, like you said, the penny might drop and then all of a sudden they need their
a lot
wanting
of
support that they didn't know they needed.
Yep.
And if you're like, oh no, actually wait, I can't. Yeah. Do that, then it's not always the best as well. So I think considering where you're at is probably important as well.
Absolutely. That's a really good point, actually.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in my experience anyway, like in friendship groups, like when someone's spoken about their experience of abuse, like sometimes I'm like, okay, you've told me this, you know, quite a few times now, and it's, you know, gotten to the point where you're continuing to talk about it. What's the next steps? So I guess, you know, allowing them to kind of reflect on, like, okay, we've spoken about this. What are the actions? What do you need me to do?
That's a nice way to word it. What do you need me to do? Not you need to do this, this, and this.
Definitely.
So what can we do if we are in a bad situation or we find ourselves like, when do you know, how do you draw the line? What are some of the things that you can do to, I guess, help yourself in those situations?
I guess going back to, you are the expert in your life. So I think it's reflecting on what's impacting you. How is it impacting you? How are you feeling? And seeking some advice or support. So it's the same, like you said before, about, you know, if you could contact 1-800-RESPECT to ask about a friend's situation, you can also contact them for your own situation. So if you aren't sure and you want to know, am I experiencing family and domestic violence? you can call, you can ask.
And that's just a conversation you can have with someone. Mm-hmm. Like there's no necessarily any further repercussions unless you choose to pursue it. Like you have the power in that situation, don't you?
Yeah.
And you could probably be anonymous, I presume. If
I assume you could be.
We speak to people who don't want to disclose the people who are using violence against them or don't want to disclose their own details. So, it's about, I guess, the readiness of that person or that woman who is seeking advice or support. And at the end of the day, like, we're planting the seed, right? So if someone's not ready, if we give them advice or support contacts so they know where to go or just, you know, create that safety plan with them, then at least they have more information than what they did at the very beginning of the conversation.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And I think also important to note that it can be another professional. You don't have to call 1-800-RESPECT. I mean, amazing resource, but your GP, a family violence service, maternal child health nurse, teacher, or there's Safe Steps as well, and we'll list those numbers. But and it could be a friend who can then, you might even want to say, can you help me work out what I can do or where to go make a plan, that kind of thing. So I guess I'm hoping that this conversation is helpful for anyone listening. If you're experiencing it, if you have experienced it, if you know someone who is, that then if a friend comes to you, you have some ideas about, you know, what to do.
I think just raising that awareness about that it, that it isn't just the physical side of it.
Yeah.
I think that's, it's just, raising that awareness for, for everyone.
Do you find that people have, I mean, I can only assume, a lot of shame around and may not want family or friends to know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there is, like, we have a lot of women that come through and their family or friends don't actually believe them.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah. So, you know, for them, speaking to someone who doesn't actually know the relationship or is an expert or specializes in, the, you know, healthy relationships is helpful for them because they might not be believed.
Do you find that sometimes if they, that those family members might know both the abuser and they're hearing two stories
and maybe also have known them for a long time and have a perception of that person in their head, they'd be like, oh, he or she would never.
And I guess, you know, for people listening, I think, you know, people who use violence in intimate relationships and family violence, they can be seen as like this amazing person outside of that relationship. You know, I've spoken to women who have said, you know, he says hi and, you know, good morning to the neighbours, but, you know, speaks to me like absolute crap.
It's just, on the news. It comes from the news too. Like if you listen to the language used on the news and it's like, oh, you know, he was an upstanding citizen, but he did this and he did this. And it's like, well, then he wasn't an upstanding citizen. Let's not start with that.
I always think about, is it Jane Gilmore on Instagram with the Fixed It? She started the account Fixed It.
And fixes
it
would the headlines.
Be headlines that would be about, like, you know, women's, like, you know, abuse that has happened or you know, women who have been killed by an intimate partner. It would be like, you know, wealthy accountant accused of, or, you know, or
it's the woman
tragic event after family, you know, and she will like fix it
or it's like the woman clear was for killed.
What it was
like it's like like it was mother. Her fault mother killed
results in death or something like that.
And you're like an asshole killed a woman,
like, or like football star blah 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 kind of thing. And it's almost like this idolization
It like perpetuates that
or like make the person using violence like the actual victim. It's like, oh, you know, someone who's gone through like mental health or like
AOD.
So I think that kind of just minimizes everything as well. Like regardless whether you're, you know, substance affected or you have mental health or health issues, like it's still not okay to treat someone like shit.
Absolutely.
When is... Can we talk a little bit around drawing the line or making that decision to end the relationship? I assume that point is just different for everyone. Anything you want to talk about there on that?
I think it's such a grey area because it is so different. I think I think it comes back to safety. Mm-hmm. If you are feeling unsafe, I think that's a time to really think about your situation. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say that's a time for you to draw the line, because we can't tell anyone what to do, but it's a time to really reflect and think, okay, is this, you know, is this time to speak to someone, or is this time to think about leaving? You know, if you are feeling unsafe.
How do you counsel women to help them? I guess obviously the line, you can't define where the line is, but how do you help them to, I suppose, define where the line is for them, to help them be able to make those decisions?
I think it's reflecting.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me it's just like asking the questions of like, is this, you know, the relationship that you want? Or, you know, I guess if a friend or a family member was to come to you and say that I'm experiencing this, what advice would you give them? Because I think, you know, putting them in like the third person really just allows them to reflect and be like, actually, no, like I wouldn't like it if my friend told me that they were experiencing this. So why would I?
Yeah.
And I guess how do we help? How do we speak up? What can we do to help the problem and spread awareness?
Yeah. I think both as women, but also men. Mm-hmm. This is a conversation that Sean and my husband Sean and I have quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think about growing up in school and going to parties and stuff, and, you know, you'd be around with all like the year 10, 11 boys, and they go, oh, you know, you want to tell a rape joke? No, like, haha, kind of thing. Like those sorts of really, and at the time you kind of, I guess, everyone just kind of laughs it off because you're young and immature. But I always say to Sean, you know, if you're ever in those situations, you just need maybe five out of those six boys have a healthy example of a healthy relationship at home. But then you have the six boy who maybe his parents have an unhealthy dynamic, and then you have those jokes in those situations that everyone just laughs at and doesn't call out, and it just further normalizes what they're seeing at home. So I always say to Sean, and it's a bit different now because we're older, and
there's probably an increased understanding of what's okay and what's not okay.
But I think it's still say it still happens in like footy locker rooms and all of those sorts of things, like the ball and chain, and you know, all of those things are just said in passing. And I always say to Sean, I'm like, can you make sure that if you ever hear that, you call it out, say, mate, that's not funny, like you know, like we would about racism or anything. But so I think while women have a role, I think men also have big role. Sorry, I kind of went on a bit of a...
No, I love it.
I'll get off my soapbox.
That's really important, and I think it is true. I think, yes, men need to be calling it out. You know, we call it out with your mates. If you see your mate do something, or he's talking about his, you know, partner or his wife in a derogatory way, call it out. Ask him why. Why are you talking about her like that?
Yeah.
Because that's going to make him reflect and go, why am I talking about her like that? And it's also, like you said, if no one laughs, then it's not funny. You know, and you're going to go, oh, okay, I'm not going to say that again. So I think, I think it's really important for men definitely to be calling it out as well, for sure.
I love our workplace because, like, there are actual, like, male practitioners who will speak to women about, like, healthy relationships and identifying, like, what they're going through is, like, not okay. So for them to just, like, you know, I guess we need more men in this space to stand up. You know, it is gendered. And at the end of the day, like, we need men to be able to, you know, this isn't just a women's issue. This is everyone's issue. You know, it's not a men's issue. It's everyone. We need everyone to get behind this and make sure that our, you know, young people are educated around what healthy relationships look like. Like, boys will be like, you know, that saying of, like,
boys will be boys.
That's it. So
let's draw the line there. That's, you know, not making any excuses for any sort of behavior.
And I think even if you're in a perfectly healthy relationship and you have children, it's like, what is the language that you're using? That, you know, is like all of those sorts of things that can just normalize. I guess it's just that we still live in a patriarchal society, and there is a level of ingrained misogyny. Like, I sometimes even find myself thinking certain ways and different things.
And
because
catch yourself.
So, yeah, because we're just so, you know, we've been fed this narrative for so long. And so we've all got a lot of, I guess, undoing and relearning to do. And I think the more that we vocalize it and we call it out and we actively take steps to, say that's not okay. Like even the, you know, simple things like, oh, you throw like a girl. You know, that whole thing. I think that's less common now. Yeah. But
even things like pussy.
Yeah.
I just, you know, using that as like a term for someone who's like weak and scared.
Like all of those terms of women. So like you're a Debbie Downer. You're a Nelly. What is it? Negative Nancy. You're
Karen. What about Karen?
Karen.
You're a Karen.
What's the male equivalent of Karen? Do we don't even have one.
They did find one did on they? The rainbow.
Oh really?
Yeah, there was they did this I can't remember what the name was now. Like but Brian they did find it. something I don't know. I can't remember. They did. I don't know which radio station I was listening to, but they did find the equivalent of they think and it's usually women, it's women's names, it's everything like you said gets used about women, but I think men just have to lead by an example and and you know if you are I guess if you are in a healthy relationship as well, what that can show someone is important too. I mean I had a client one time and she said, you know, she said to me all men are bad. And I said, no. I said, they're not. And she couldn't believe me. She could not get her head around that there actually are good men. I said, my dad, my brother, my husband, my father-in-law, you know, I said, there are so many great men. And I think, just leading by example.
And because it's so cyclical and it can like become generational, like people can experience it as a child and then they experience it in their own relationships as they're an adult. So you could, you know, it kind of follows that generational cycle at times as well.
Never had
that example.
Yeah.
And I suppose that probably goes for perpetrators as well. Like if that's what you grew up witnessing. Mm-hmm. It's like at what age do you go from having sympathy for someone to
becoming
perpetrator. Perpetrator themselves. And I think it's so complex.
Yeah. And I think that's really important for us to call out for this episode too, though, is that it is not all men. And I know like you said, it's a gendered issue. Well, it's not, I mean, it affects everyone, but the stats tell like alarming tale. But I know Andrew always gets upset because every time he's ever had in workplaces and stuff training on this, it's often been from a really angry woman who does a lot of man bashing, and he's in his work dealt with a lot of male victim survivors as well.
Yeah,
and he gets really frustrated because he's like, actually, we do need to look at both sides as well and really acknowledge that there are many men suffering. So I just wanted to sort of call that out as well. Yeah. While it disproportionately affects women, we're not saying this is just one.
Yeah. I do find though my only counter to that, and I totally agree, but I've had this conversation with some people and couple of friends in our social circle when we've been talking about men's violence against women, they go, well, what about men's suicide? Like one in four men are dying from suicide every day. And it's like, that's fine, but they're two entirely separate issues. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't go, it's breast cancer awareness day. Mm-hmm. What about ovarian cancer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like they're both terrible.
Yeah.
And but they can each hold space for both.
Yes.
And just because you're talking about one doesn't mean you're invalidating another.
Exactly.
So yeah, just to call that out as
well. The focus as well needs to shift. Because the focus has been a lot about women and women being removed from homes and, you know, women seeking support because of someone else's bad behaviour. I feel like there needs to be more resources towards people who are using violence.
Let's stop the problem rather than have the solution.
Yeah.
And start young.
Yeah.
Like schools.
Yeah.
Like programs in schools.
I think that's what I'm really like passionate about at the moment is just prevention. Like how do we actually support people who are using violence? How do we stop removing women from their homes and their children? And I guess, you know, there's been so much accountability towards women reporting breaches even of intervention orders. I think it's just the funding needs to shift.
Is there, are there many programs out there to, I don't know, quote unquote, reform perpetrators? Or if a man finds himself doing this, or woman, and they want to, they recognise it as not okay and they want to stop, break the cycle, all that kind of stuff, is there much out there for them to, like programs and things?
Yeah, there is. So, there are some that they can access themselves, and then there are some, I believe, that need to be accessed through the courts.
Yeah. So, but again, it's, you know, like majority of it is like mandatory or voluntary. So there's, it's either like one end of the spectrum or like the lower end. So
You have to really, if it's voluntary, you have to really want to do it.
Yeah.
And show that you really want to do it.
Yeah. You really want to change.
We've just got a couple of listener questions.
I'll go for it,
So one listener asked, what's the most helpful thing you can say or do and what is the worst? We've probably covered that, but anything you'd touch on there? A quick best practice, a quick worst practice?
Well, worst would definitely be like just leave because it's just not that easy.
It's not that helpful.
Not that helpful, not that easy. Best, I mean.
Best would be, I guess, like, what do you need from me? What do you need me to do to support you during this process and during this experience of your life?
We have one which we've sort of touched on, but I feel like this is a different angle. Mm-hmm. How to broach the sensitive topic with a friend in a suspected abusive relationship. Like, if they have not actively brought it up, but you can tell and you've seen signs.
Or you think there might
How do you bring that up? Because that's a pretty massive deal to imply that, you know, their partner, who they love, is not doing right by them.
Yeah. That's really tricky.
I think just checking in.
Yeah.
Just checking in, like asking the question, is everything okay? Yeah. Like, you know, I've observed this. Like, you know, how do you feel about it? And, you know, I guess if it's something that they haven't really seen, then they might actually need you to say something. Because if they're, you know, wearing that colored colored glasses,
or they've been told, like gaslit and told that like they're overreacting and that's not a problem, and what's your problem, there's nothing wrong with my
and
behavior.
They've normalized it, that it's, you know, something that just happens like on a day-to-day basis, that it's like oh, it's not actually a big deal for me, but for someone who's observing it, it's actually
something I've probably experienced when having conversations about tricky sort of relationship situations with friends is When I've actually called out and said, no, that's not okay, you are totally valid to feel that way. I think validating, and once or twice that's happened and they've been like, oh, like, thank you for saying that, because I just thought, I'm like losing my mind. I'm like, it didn't seem like the right thing, but I was told that it was fine. And so maybe validating and calling it out that, oh, look, I've observed this and that is actually not okay. Depends on the person, how they might receive that.
Yeah, depends. And it depends, I guess, how you sort of weave that into conversation too, like really pick your moment. I think,
Do you have any tips for teachers? So another question was tips for teachers, childcare workers, and spotting the signs in children.
I feel like I know childcare workers definitely have their own training in that. Definitely. I've got friends in childcare and they know what to look out for. Teachers, I'm not actually sure, because it was a question that I asked a while ago to someone who I know who's a teacher, and they sort of said it wasn't something they were necessarily trained in, but they are advised to look out for it.
I've had friends who are teachers and they say kids will make comments.
So
they'll say, oh, this my such and such hit me or whatever, and they'll hear that, and then or sometimes in art and some of those questions and things. But I guess because I guess kids don't really know.
And they don't know what's okay.
They don't.
I mean, I'm sure they feel it, but like,
don't necessarily know. I guess it's like well-being. I mean, well-being like coordinators will often reach out to services if they've got concerns for kids. They might not necessarily be speaking about specifically what's happening, but little glimpses of it. And they'll reach out. But I guess for signs, I mean,
I think for me, like kids never lie. Are brutally honest. So if they say something that's concerning, that's coming from somewhere as well. So I think also like if they're like emotionally like withdrawn from their, you know, their friends at school, or if I think just behaviours that come up.
Don't want to go home.
Don't want to go home, or like feeling scared to talk and quiet.
Or absent a
missing,
lot.
Missing or like really late all the time.
Yeah.
Things like that. It could be things just to check in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Check in with the child.
Yeah.
I think they're probably some big ones. Definitely. Yeah.
The last question we had from our listeners was actually about the two of you. So how do you balance your work and life when you're dealing with so much heaviness at work?
I don't watch the news. That's like my big rule.
Yeah.
I definitely just – I don't watch the news. I don't want to see what's happening outside of that. And I think it's just really making time for yourself and just doing things that make you happy. On the weekends and things like that, making sure that you're really looking after yourself. And I think in the area that we work in, self-care is a massive thing, and that's always talked about in
we love
any
self-care.
Workplace. Yeah, we love it. And we're very lucky. We're very supported as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, like sharing, I guess, advice or information around like healthy relationships, like regardless whether it's like for myself or like for my friends, like it's always like a passion of mine to always want to strive better. So I actually share a lot of awareness through my small business of making candles, and I love, sharing awareness around, you know, this type of topics, because there is a lot of women that are experiencing this, and it's something that I'm passionate about, like, you know, contributing to how can we actually reduce the amount of women who are impacted around this, and how do we support men who are using violence. Like self-care is definitely I love self-care.
We on the Brunch Files.
Just like anything that gets me, like, you know, whether it's meditation, the gym. My partner and I actually, like, we're in a healthy relationship and we see a couples counselor. Like, we love reflecting about how well we're doing, how not so great. Yes. But, like, it also, like, that's comes so down good. To, like, being able to communicate well with each other. So,
Well, we're going to probably have to wrap it up soon. I feel like we could keep talking about this, but... before we get to some, I just had a question. Before we get to some services, are there any, so one thing, we did a little Christmas series last year, and I'm just thinking it's October, and we spoke about as alternate gifts that you could give people. If you've got people in your life that sort of know, they've got everything, right, but you want to give them something, like making a donation on their behalf, and I think people tend to do that a bit around Christmas time.
Good idea.
Are there any like services or charities or things that are doing really great work in this space that people, if they're looking to maybe they can't give their time but they can give their money, are there some services that you would recommend?
Well, I mean, Mia's.
They're candle. The candles are shaped as women. Women body shapes. So there's different body shapes of women, so including pregnant ones as well. So like we said, you know, family violence and domestic violence doesn't discriminate. So and I actually donate 10% of my income towards services that I pick out. So I think last year I picked VACA, which is an Aboriginal service. I guess helping out like small businesses like that, or even, you know, donating to Safe Steps or 1-800 Respect, or you know, those organizations that do help women and men.
St Kilda Mums, if you like donating anything that you've had from your kids as well, they do amazing work supporting women and children by donating, like, it could be prams and car seats and everything. So they actually do a lot.
Even Share the Dignity, I think, at the moment, doing their November drive. And sanitary products, toothbrush, toothpaste, body wash, that can often go to people in difficult situations like that as well, I think.
And one I think I mentioned last year that we've donated to in the past was the Alana Madeline Foundation. But they have a I think at Christmas time, they might do it all the time, but they had a particular drive where they were putting together backpacks. So if you donated $50, it was a backpack that could be given, you know, to a child who was being removed from their home, and they might go with nothing. So they get to that, you know, that temporary care, and they've got fresh pajamas and a toothbrush and some books to read and you know, some things like that as well.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's a great idea. Mm. And we'll share. We're so tagging the candle business. I can't wait to have it. We'll share all of that in
our show. I'll definitely make some for you guys for Christmas.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
No, thank you. But Rachel, do you want to just run through or me or Beck, if you guys wanted to run through just if people are needing support right now, where can they go?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest one is definitely in 000. So if you are needing immediate support and help, then 000 is the best number to call.
And I think with that, even if you're unsure, like don't ever think that your situation isn't bad enough to warrant that. If you are feeling unsafe, then you call. That is what it's there for. That is what you know. You are not. No one is going to resent you or think, oh, this is not, you know, a big enough issue. Like this, that's what it's there for. So don't ever hesitate.
There's that other police number as well, isn't it?
When you need the police, but not the sirens.
Yeah.
Yes. look up what that is.
Something 777. I know that, but I can't remember. I'll look that up. All you do.
Yeah. Yep. Perfect. Yeah.
There's also Safe Steps. So if anyone who doesn't know what Safe Steps is, they provide crisis support. For women and children experiencing family or domestic violence. They're 24/7 as well, so and statewide. So definitely utilize that if you are experiencing family or domestic violence. But also there's local services which, you know, like the Orange Door, which is also statewide as well. We can send you guys the details of that.
Yeah, definitely list that. And when you need the police but not the sirens, the number is 131-444.
Oh, 444. You might know it's triple something.
Did well.
Always a triple.
That's it. But look, thank you both so much. We have really been looking forward to this episode. It's obviously a much more serious topic than we often cover, but just having your amazing experience, insight, and I guess the respectful way you're able to talk about this is just amazing. And we hope that this has been really helpful for listeners as well.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, thank you guys so much again, and thank you to everyone for listening, and we will see you in the next one.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
The Brunch Files would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live, meet, work and play, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and of course any First Nations peoples who may be listening today.
This podcast is all about the adventures, stories and laughs of being a woman in her 30s. While we strive to entertain and share relatable experiences, please remember that our content is purely for fun and shouldn't be taken too seriously, and it's definitely not professional advice. Life is a wild ride and everyone's journey is unique. We believe that laughter is the best policy, and we're just here to spread some joy.